Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we have been struggling to get hold of some of the members, but we feel that we must act, and that at the time when we want to make a decision, we will then make some arrangements at that stage to get people that will give us a quorum, because the work must go on. Let me welcome all of you, especially delegation from METEC. I'm going to give you an opportunity when you are going to address us, for you to introduce yourselves to us. Just a few housekeeping issues. One is to do with the situation of secretariat in this committee. As you all are aware, honourable members, that we have been struggling for something like 3 to 4 months to get the secretariat arrangement proper. The last secretary we had could not work with us very well, and could also not work with the stakeholders very well, including METEC. At one stage, METEC was not invited at all, but we were waiting for them to come to us. When we further investigated, we discovered that they were not invited at all. So it's one of the issues that resulted in us changing the secretariat. Now, we were given, Mr. King Kunene, we were told by the committee session that he's on loan until the situation is clarified at the committee session in terms of who exactly is going to be deployed to this committee. Now, today you will see that we've got two secretaries here, one being Mr. Kunene and the other one being Ayanda Boss. Apparently, we are given Ayanda Boss as the committee, and Mr. Kunene, I don't know what's going to happen to him. You see, we had a very serious situation of secretariat work being suffering, but all of a sudden, we now have an oversupply of secretariat. So I ask Kunene to remain, because we want to thank you for the services that you have rendered so far. When you got into the picture, we became a committee that we know ourselves to be. You were so efficient that there was a big debate whether we must release you and simply fight with the committee session. But then sanity prevailed that no, let's allow the committee section to do its work in the manner in which it does it. They must give us somebody who will be deployed in this committee permanently, and that they will take you back to your old committee. You were so excellent, especially in the two trips that you've undertaken. When we were at Free State on the oversight, and recently last week when we were at KZN, we never had glitches. Honorable members will agree with me. We never had problems, either of documentation, of understanding who are meeting next, where is the meeting going to take place, and we're driving through to the mines. Mines are in the outlying areas. So we knew what time are we leaving, what time are we going to be there, what time are we leaving that particular mine. So we want to thank you. And indeed, we'll write a letter to the committee section to appreciate the services that you have rendered. So that next time, when you are requested, if Ayanda, for example, is taken ill, they must give us the same services as they have done. I don't know if that would be the case, because it would appear that in the committee section there's lots of ups and downs. In that also, we would want to welcome Ayanda Boss. She is not new in the committee. She has been an assistant, permanent assistant to this committee, until first time that she was able to then climb through the ranks of this committee section. she's now a fully fledged committee secretary, and we're fortunate that she's deployed back here. So she's familiar with yourself, she's familiar with the work that she's going to do. Thank you very much. Let's give Wuki a round of applause. And welcome, Ayanda. Thank you very much, honorable members. You will comment as and when you feel you want to comment. The other matter is the term, the program for this term. Today we're supposed to listen to MINTEC, and we're supposed to be briefed by the Department of Mineral Resources and companies that are operational in the platinum sector on the crisis that we find ourselves in the platinum sector, to understand the depth of those crises and what is the future scenario likely to be. Unfortunately, both the department and the companies have requested that we give them some more time to prepare our report so that they can come and brief us on the facts surrounding the crisis in the platinum sector. We've granted them that request. And then the other item is that we would adopt the outstanding minutes. And that, I don't know if you have your copies of the report, the program. We would, next week we've got a directive that all meetings are cancelled because there will be a sitting at 10 on Wednesday the 15th. And as a result, next week on that 15th, we are going to have the briefing, the joint meeting with the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee, where we would have dealt with the matter of the NDFT, the Alexco Development Foundation, and NAMDA. So that meeting will not take place on the 22nd of August. And that the mining charter workshop, which was going to take place on the 22nd of August, will now take place in that week of the 17th of September, in that week of the 3rd of September, and that the oversight visit, the study tour that we were planning for Australia, originally we planned it for the 3rd to the 7th of September, but with the communication with the High Commissioner of Australia, they're giving us dates where their parliament will be in session, the week of the 17th to the 21st. So please, in your diaries, note that we will be working in Australia from the 17th to the 21st of September, excluding traveling days. So that 5 days, it will be 5 days of working. And that then when we come back, we will go to our constituencies and our affairs. Those are the changes in the program. And unless there are any comments from members, if not, then we will allow MINTEC to then address us and introduce themselves and then address us. Over to you, MINTEC.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members. I'm Advocate Block, I'm a board member. Thanks for inviting us to present this strategic plan meeting today. Unfortunately, the Chairperson and the Technical Chairperson couldn't make it. So I'm representing the board today. Without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to Abel to present the plan. Thank you.
Sorry. Just before then, can I get that? Sorry to interrupt you in the middle. We need to know. We say we're struggling with the quorum. There are a lot of apologies, Honourable Members, which is the reason why we're struggling to get the quorum. Honourable Charlie has apologized. Honourable Hululu has apologized. Honourable Tinto has apologized. Honourable Ngele has apologized. Women's Week. Women's Month, okay. Honourable Bele, Honourable Huang, they have apologized. Honourable Lucas is on his way. Advocate Schmidt also believe that he is on his way, and that's why we're struggling to get the quorum. Those are the apologies. They quite a lot. Back to you, MINTEC.
Thanks very much, Chair. I'm Evim Gomez-Rule. I'm the President and CEO of Mintel, and I'm with my colleagues here. I think the staff are introducing them now. Next to us, Ed Block, Saxi Milan, who's the General Manager of Finance. And then we've got Peter Basement, who's the General Manager of Business Development. Alan McKenzie, General Manager of Technology. Dr. Kapa Makafula, who's the General Manager R&D, Research and Development. And we've got Advocate Mungate Ramushaba, who's the General Manager of Corporate Services. Yes, I've got all them behind me. I'm protected. Chair, I have to start by apologizing on the mishap that happened. That happened at the time when you ended up only having speech at the Council for Social Science doing a presentation. As we have alluded, we were not informed in time, and I think we were informed a day and a half before, so we couldn't make it. But fortunately, this time we've been able to make it. But Chair, I would really ask through you that in future to cut middle persons or middle men or middle women, that we have a direct, we also have a direct relationship with the committee secretary in order to avoid this mishap happening to us. They are happening to us, we've got too many loops in the system, and other people forget their work, and we all suffer for one person for two. So we have a direct link with the secretariat that they will be able to solve, which is what we've done today. I would just like to mention to the members that the presentation that we have here is such an amplification of the shareholder compact that we just did. In preparing the presentation, we avoided to quote the shareholder compact as it is. We wanted to be not explanatory, fully explanatory, so we tried to put more pictures to make the members feel that they are already meeting everything here, but to amplify the shareholder compact. The first slide that we have, Chair, is just showing the planning cycle that we follow with Mintec. You actually can see that throughout the year, we plan throughout the year. If you look at quarter one, which is April, May, June, for you, Chair, quarter one is there, Q1. We already in quarter one look at the opportunities for future and do progress reviews. Actually, we do the progress reviews on a monthly basis. And then if you look at quarter two, which is July, August, September, I think Chairperson is aware that already now in August we're consolidating our information for application for the medium-term extension framework. So that's when we start looking at critical. And then in September also we do an internal review of 6 months, seeing what have we achieved in 6 months, and comparing and revising our plan to see whether by the end of the year we'll be able to achieve what we said in the original budget. So we revise our budget in June. And then quarter three, which is written as Q3 there, that's when we have our strategic session as we take. Normally the department has a strategic session in September, we have ours in November. That is, we always have our strategic session after the department because we feel that they have to marshal up. We cannot have our strategic session before our bosses have their session. And then quarter four, therefore, is then when we finalize the show the competence to see. So that's just the life cycle of what we do in learning. Campus to MITEC is the business of MITEC. The core business of MITEC is research and development. Okay? Either on efficient mineral processes or on green technologies currently. But we have added, besides the normal research that we do, the next objective that we have is the promotion of mineral-based economies. We'll talk about the road in further. And we also build world-class R&DFL. Building world-class R&DFL is actually looking at human development of people that are working in MITEC. Unfortunately, the Science Council, I think that's a non-scientific that we are forced to do, which is upholding good governance, that is looking at the legal framework and policies and all that. And also we have to look at ensuring the short-term viability of MITEC and also the long-term sustainability of MITEC, which is financial matters. And also we have to enhance MITEC to be seen outside and be known by everybody that is in a commission that is called MITEC. But obviously, when you look at this work that we're doing, if it's not based on any government framework, then it's useless as it is. And therefore, all the work that we're doing at Mintec is aligned to government outcomes, the priorities of government, but not all 12 of them. The most critical one is outcome number 4, which is decent employment through inclusive growth. That's one of our key objectives, the objective that satisfies that requirement, is the R&D of efficient mineral processing technologies and value-added products and services, which is the core business of Nutec. The other outcome number five, which is skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive path, is that we do promotion of mineral-based communities of rural and marginalized communities, and also the human development of our staff and people outside of Nutec. The next outcome that we specified, outcome number seven, which is vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities, where it's the same thing, where we promote a mineral-based economy of rural and marginalized communities. I won't delve into them now. You can see, as we go on with the presentation, some of the team members will be talking in detail on these issues. I just want to highlight some of the issues. And then the other key outcome is outcome number 10, which is environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. In this, under this, we do research and develop green technologies and processes to mitigate the impact of mineral development on the environment. And then on outcome number 12, which is the last outcome, is efficient, effective, and development of oriented public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. This we do through making sure that Nutec is credible and is visible, and look at also at long-term, short-term viability and long-term sustainability of Nutec, and also by upholding good governance practices. However, Chair, I would like to highlight that we can have all these nice things and a nice topic, but if you stay in a building or work in a building like this one, nobody will be interested to join Nutec and uphold Nutec. This is a picture that we took in 2008 and showed Trader when we did the NTF application, just to show them how decaying the place was. Unfortunately, we didn't get the money, but due to reprioritization, we are now able to show how beautiful Nutec looks like. Most of the areas of Nutec, we are continuously improving the building just so that it looks better than what it was. Just showing again how we are improving the infrastructure, I want to show members this side on the left-hand side of the picture. If you look on the left-hand side of the picture here, this is a corridor at Nutec. It's the normal corridor as you walk in the premises of Nutec, the offices. This is how it looks like. Okay. When we said we had an open plan, this is how open plan looked like. Okay. But then, with the foresight, we rented out a building to PhD students some time back. And then, unfortunately, about 2 years ago, they decided to move their research outside of South Africa, and then they gave us back our building. This is what you see. That's how the building that we bought from PHP, which we rented out to PHP, this is how it looked like. Okay? And we had to move some of the staff there. It was quite a competition who's going to move to such a nice building. Eventually, one division, biotechnology, moved there. However, that taught us and showed us that as scientists, we don't have to work in places like this. We have to continue improving ourselves, and then we reprioritize again. This is how Nutec is starting to look like now. This is an office. This is an open plan at Nutec, how it looks like. This is an HR, open plan at HR. This is an open plan in one of the divisions of Nutec. So that's the type of improvement that we're doing at Nutec. If you look at the change house, I think, Kevin, we have seen so many change houses in your life on the line. And I don't think we have often seen such a nice change house. This is one of the new things that are happening at Nutec, to improve the lives of the people. So I think they are at home. They should remember that they've got a nice place where they're working at. So we hope it will encourage more intelligent people to come and work at Nutec. Okay, on the other hand, I would like to say that it's not only buildings that make people stay in a company. We've looked at the human development of persons at Nutec. The first program that we have is a STEM program. STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. It's an old program that Nutec has had for many years, which is looking at, I would say, our potential staff or our potential employees. It's looking at students' pre-metric level. We do competitions, which we call the increase, testing them, their knowledge in math and science. It's an old program that is there. And I'm happy to say now most of that program is sponsored by private sector companies. Nutec puts very little money on it. The only thing that we do, we organize the provincial competitions and end up once in a year with the national competition at Nutec. But otherwise, it's paid for by private sector companies. from there in developing people, we have a trust. And I'm happy to announce that in the 2 years, the number of full-time employees at MINTEC who hold MINTEC bilingual study have dramatically increased. What it means is that now we've got quite a number of staff members that are doing their masters and their PhDs, including my dear chairperson. But I feel that at some point you have to lead by example. And continue, if you're in a science country, you must continue improving yourself, irrespective of the age you are. And for the first time this year, chairperson, we've developed what we call a graduate development program. I think a number of times we've come here and complained that our new graduates, when they come to MINTEC, they only stay maximum 4 years and then they resign. So in trying to encourage them to stay in MINTEC, we've developed what we call a graduate development program. As they arrive the first year at MINTEC, we don't expect them to be allocated a specific job or to be responsible for a specific project. What we do, we've created a program where they spend 3 months, something like 3 months in one division and then move to another division, including service division, that is your finance, and your HR. In that way, we're trying to make them to understand the whole company rather than understanding the field in which they'll be trained. We think that will make them to be aware that they don't have to work in one place at MINTEC, but they can work in any other place that they're interested in working in. We're hopeful that that will encourage them to take up more at MINTEC. We also have what we call internship and learnership. In this, we partner with other government departments. For example, we partnered with MQA, where some of our staff members are being sponsored by MQA, by us and MQA, in doing apprenticeship. I think there's been quite a cry in our country that we have lost that skill. So we're in the forefront of bringing back that skill at MINTEC. And we also help other people that are being sponsored by MQA for practical training, who come to us for practical training for internship and learnership. And we've got quite a number of internships that we do also with other companies, your National Research Foundation and other state companies, who actually subsidize the salaries of the people that we employ and give them a practical experience, and some of them make them to be able to be affordable, to be absorbed in the working environment. However, most of them end up being absorbed by us at MINTEC. There are only a few that we leave to other companies to absorb. On the other hand, in 2008-09, we decided on a new program of helping managers, of upgrading our managers at MINTEC. We first started with what we call a new management program, which was done by Vets in 2008. We repeated it again in 2009. This was trying to upskill the lower levels of people at MINTEC and also the managers. Because if you look at it, we normally get a new graduate from the university who don't have any experience in managing people. And we decided to give them a soft skill for them to understand how it is to be managed. However, Chair, I'm not proud to announce that of the 13 that started this program in 2008, 44% of them have already resigned at MINTEC, no more at MINTEC. In a sense, is that the more we give people skills, the more that they see greener pastures somewhere else, which is a worrying factor. But we said, let's not stop training people, because after those initial 2 years, we then talk with VET and we develop a management advancement program to further skill our people, because we felt that if we say people are resigning, if we skill them and stop skilling them, then we'll be also killing our country and getting the good people who have MINTEC experience. We're happy to meet people outside MINTEC who have MINTEC experience, because most of them come back and do business with us as MINTEC. We also have currently, this year 2012, we have what we call executive management program, which we are doing for the Genesis, which is also a program that is done by our management staff. Two of us who are here are part of this program. It's quite a good program of enhancing management styles that are being practiced. So we do look at the human side of people as well. In today's presentation, Chair, which is what we focus on in our shareholder compact, these are the main projects that we're going to talk about. The Derelict and Ownerless Mine, the Condos Precious Metal Smelting, the Advanced Sensor Base Rock Stocking, Rare Earth Elements Binary, Salmin, Semi-Precious Gemstone Project that we're going to have in Northern Cape, Center for Mining Waste and Precious Metals, based at one product. So these are the main issues that we are going to talk about. Looking at the financial chain, this is a very interesting graph. And I keep on presenting it every time when I come here because I'm trying to drill into the members so they understand the financial implications of the decisions that they've taken. If you look at this, we've got the bar graph. This bar graph are what you get from the state grant. And the yellow is basically what you get from commercial work that you do. You can see how the state grant has been going, you know, at that angle. And you can see, and this information is from 1968, very long ago. You can see how the commercial work goes up exponentially. Okay? And you can see the total revenue follows exactly the trend of our commercial work. If we make losses because of the commercial work, you can see the company makes losses. So basically what this graph is telling us is that we are dependable on commercial work. Okay? And without commercial work, we cannot survive. I always tell people that if you ask us not to do a work for one day, you must know that it must end. We don't have a salary. Okay? So we're pushed to do commercial work. But what we have done, all the state grant money is ring-fenced just to do research and nothing else. So the products of research are the ones that make us to be able to be commercial viable. But it will have to be commercial. There's nothing else you can do. That's the way of life. And I always say those who were here in the 70s up to about 1978, hated people because I'm not saying happy people because of a certain society nature, perfect. I'm just saying that they are happy people because they could sit and just do research only. And never, I can see some chairperson have become cross when I say that. I apologize, but it was not my intention. But they had a nice time when they were just doing research. And that was it. And there's a big difference between people who like research and people who like commercial work. There are those people who just want to do research and they're interested in commercial work. So now we've got to juggle and have both types of people. And I'm happy to announce that this is the team that is able to juggle between the science, the state grant, which is R&D, and also the commercial work. This team that you see here, the leadership team of MinTech, is 70% designated people, which is very rare when it comes to other state programs, where you have very less designated people in their organogram. We've made it. We're still not yet there, but we've made it. However, I've got to say it and say it upfront that we get very disappointed when it comes to ladies. Okay, this being a women's month, it's only 15%. Hey, look at the structure, it's only 15% of people who are female at MinTech, which is very, very disappointing. On average, we find that every second year, at this level, every second year there's a woman that resigns. Okay. And it's not that we are trying. We're trying, and they leave because they get poached. Okay. They barely disappear. So it's a very catch-22 situation that we have, but we are trying. But what I can say is now, at the level just below this, which is at the head level, that's where we have now about the high number of ladies, and we're hopeful that if vacancies open up, they'll be able to move up the ladder rather than us importing people from outside. Chair, I will leave it there on my side, and the general managers will starting with business development, followed by technology, and then R&D, then corporate services, and then at the end we'll have Mamokiti, and then we'll have starting on finances. Talking just briefly about the work in the divisions that we are going to do during the course of the financial year. Again, thank you very much, Chair. Peter.
Thanks, Dave. Good morning, Honourable Chairman, members. My name is Peter Craven. I look after business development at MinTech. Effectively, business development does exactly that. It looks for new opportunities for MinTech, mostly on the commercial side. It provides commercial business support to the operating divisions. We provide business intelligence via a unit that we have within business development called Mineral Economics and Strategy. That work with both MinTech as well as external departmental clients. For example, we participate in the DMR's efforts in beneficiation. We've had a number of approaches regarding the mineral site of creation of special economic zones. We handle the management of intellectual property, MINTEC, and we fully comply with the requirements of the Act. MINTEC, in fact, was one of the leaders amongst the state-owned entities and universities in terms of having its policy attested and getting procedures and systems in place. We coordinate MINTEC marketing. Most of the direct marketing is technical marketing that is done by the divisions themselves, which is most effective in our industry. But my division looks at the coordination of the marketing, mostly at certain international trade shows, etc. We take responsibility for certain special projects. For example, as Abel said, the rare earth refinery opportunity in South Africa. And then lastly, and very importantly, in the area that I'm going to focus on, we're managing MINTEC's contribution to the DMR rehabilitation program. I know that's a very busy slide. Maybe not to look at the details of each of the projects, but to look at the numbers that we're involved in, and then most importantly, the last two columns of the number of temporary jobs that have been facilitated by this program. It's the rehabilitation of the derelict and unlit mine site is not part of MINTEC's core technical skill. Why we took it on is because we've got scientists, environmental scientists, and we have engineers at MINTEC. They have well-established procurement and project management systems. So because of this, we are able to take on part of the work that is necessary for DMR to do in terms of rehabilitation. We are currently working under a three-year contract that terminates at the end of this financial year. In respect of that project, we've got a 90 million rand budget. How it works is that the Council for Geosciences has established the database of the a derelict site in South Africa. There are over 6,000 sites under that that have been identified. These numbers obviously depend on the definition of a particular site. A number of the most important of the sites that are most important for rehabilitation are those that are a asbestos. I further understand that there are over 250 asbestos sites, which will require something of the order of 3 billion rand to remediate. So what MINTEC is currently doing is a very small component of the overall number of sites that needs to be rehabilitated in South Africa. CGS identifies the sites, DMR provisionally prioritizes the sites. MINTEC then goes and looks at the sites, defines a scope of work and a plan for the rehabilitation, prepares budget estimate for that rehabilitation. DMR then confirm the priority of the work that we need to undertake under the budget. MINTEC then prepares the tenders, evaluates the tenders, supervises the rehabilitation, and finally gets it signed. We've been, I believe, very successful in those sites that we have done. They've been rehabilitated to world best practice. After the slide, I'll show you the final photograph of, for example, this asbestos dump in the North Cape. You can see a very small photograph of the nature of the material where you've got exposed asbestos rock that's subject to water and air erosion. Most of the work is heavy earth moving, where you recontour those sites, you fill up shafts, you demolish any structures that might be there. Before the digging, you contour the ground. You can see on the bottom sites, if you look carefully, there are certain horizontal lines. Those are water erosion areas. And then finally, the site gets revegetated to as close to its original condition as possible. We should complete, under this contract, about 15 sites. And we very much hope that there will be a budget available after the completion of this contract that we can continue the work, albeit at a relatively small scale compared to the overall problem in South Africa. Thanks very much.
Good morning, honourable members and chairperson. I'm Alan McKenzie, the General Manager of Technology. I'm going to take you through a number of our flagship or key projects. The first one that we have spoken about before, what was entered to the committee, is the ConsRoast technology. Just to remind members, This is an alternative smelting technology for platinum group element constructs. So we developed it in an effort to provide an alternative to smelting, which is currently tied up by the four main manufacturer producers from the platinum sector. The technology has been commercialized by Jubilee Platinum. We have signed contracts. They have their own material, so they are developing platinum mines themselves. But to increase the amount of material to a level where it would sustain a smelter operation, they have signed an offtake agreement with ASA Metals to process chrome tailings to recover the PGMs. And we are expecting further announcements, though, in fairly serious negotiations, and we hope within the next couple of months that they'll be making further announcements that will see an increase in the pace of commercialization. But certainly they are busy building their first furnaces, and they have tied up the supply to be able to have a sustainable flow of material to put through that smelter. So that is a technology that's been on a probably 15-year development path, and we're now in the final stages of that coming to the marketplace. Moving on then again with platinum at this stage, this we've also spoken and presented to the committee before. This is the Bay 2 atomizer plant, which really builds on the Conroe's technology in that it allows the platinum-bearing metal that comes out of the furnace to be reduced in size to a powder, which makes it much more amenable for further processing. Now, that atomizer plant, as we speak, has been built. We are in the final stages of commissioning. We started up the plant in the beginning of June, so it's been producing metal since the beginning of June. And as happens with many plants, the commissioning is a staged process. We, in fact, hope to put the hot metal through the final stage of the atomizer plant sometime this week. That's based on a two-year project with Anglo American Platinum, processing material for Anglo American Platinum. It's a technology that they hope to implement, so this is a demonstration stage project. The capital to put that upgraded atomizer into Mintic facility, it's 44 million rand. Just over half of it supplied directly by Anglo Platinum. And in addition, there's a 50 million rand contribution from the MTF. This has, in fact, allowed Mintic to re-employ currently 19 of the staff that we had to retrench 2 years ago when the market downturn occurred. In fact, we're busy in the process currently of probably re-employing another 5 or 6 of them. And there's 2 to 3 that have in the meantime found other employment. So it will mean at the end of this process we're probably sitting with less than 10 people who we haven't been able to re-employ yet. Just to show you at the bottom some of the pictures, the one on the left-hand side is the furnace. Once we started up in the beginning of June tapping metal, the middle photo there is the furnace sitting on the left-hand side. And this really is the new plant. When you saw the committee earlier in the year, we were only able to produce design drawings and schematics of it. That is now the actual plant that's been built. And on the right-hand side, that is the ladle with the hot metal being transferred in the plant during the phase of commissioning. So that plant now, as I say, is in the final stages of commissioning. We hope as early as the end of this week for it to be operational. Moving on then to the next area of priority, which is advanced sensor-based sorting. Now really in the last decade or so, with the development of electronics and computer power, it's now possible to analyze ore rocks on an individual basis. Whether that rock be very large, half a meter in size, or very small, 1 centimeter in size, the technology exists using a range of electronic sensors to actually analyze those rocks in situ. Now, what this allows is for one to sort those rocks to remove waste. And as I'm sure all of us know, one of the challenges going into the future is that the very good mineral deposits that one has seen in the past have now been exhausted. All deposits are becoming more complex, they're becoming lower grade, which makes it more and more difficult to process them economically. and yet society still demands those commodities to improve our lifestyle. What sensei sorting allows you to do is upfront, once you've mined that waste, that rock, before you start processing it, it allows you to remove the waste. Now this makes it far more energy efficient because you reduce the waste upfront, you don't have to put that waste through the plant. It reduces the size of the plant. It reduces the amount of water that's needed to process further downstream. So it really is a breakthrough technology that I personally believe will be a paradigm shift and lead to changes in how the industry works. It's still fairly early days. It's an emergent technology, but certainly we believe that it will in future make tremendous differences to how the industry operates. For instance, if you take the gold sector in South Africa, we know it's on a decline. We know that it's very deep. But if you can underground separate the waste rock from the ore, you don't have to hoist that waste 4 kilometers to the surface, wasting power and energy. You don't have to process that waste rock on the surface. You can remove it from the ore and you can leave the waste underground. It will change the way the industry operates. So we believe that this is a very important technology. We have facilities and they continue to grow. Just 2 of them are illustrated there in the pictures. So we believe that in terms of research and in terms of enabling and supporting the industry, that this is going to be very important. Thank you. We'll move on there to the rare earth element refinery. Again, it's something that has been presented to the committee before. So really just to give an update on where we are. Mintek believes that it's very important to develop the concept of a centralized refinery in South Africa. We know that contrary to the name rare earth elements, they're not actually that rare, but the processing of them is very complex and very expensive. In the southern African region, we have a lot of rare earth deposits, but all of them are relatively small, and they won't carry the $1 billion cost of putting up a refinery. So we believe that if we're to develop a rare earth industry, rare earths are green metals. They're used in low energy electric motors, electric vehicles, batteries, LCD screens, electronics, etc. We believe that if we're to develop a rare earth industry locally and to beneficiate that, the concept of a centralized refinery is key to unlocking that value. Now we received some MTEF funding to build and run a pilot plant. That is fairly well developed. The designs are being finalized, and we hope within the next month or two to start issuing tenders for some of that equipment, so that within the next 9 months or so, we will have the plant built, and we will be beginning to operate that. At the same time, we are progressing the commercial aspects of it. Mintek is working with 6 to 8 of the current people assessing rare earth deposits regionally. We also have very good communications with IDC to look at funding this and putting together and packaging the centralized refinery concept. So at this stage that is proceeding well, and hopefully once we've got some results out of the pilot plant, we will be able to put together the centralized refinery. Moving on then to SAVN water treatment. Again, this is a technology that was developed by Mintek in the last 15 to 20 years. That's often how long it takes for technologies to come to market in the mining sector. It's aimed at treating water, including acid mine drainage. We signed a cooperation agreement with Veolia, who are one of the world's largest water treatment companies. We realized that as big and as experienced as Mintek is, we really don't have the same degree of knowledge and expertise in water treatment as some of the leading companies. They already managed to make significant inputs into cutting the cost of treatment. As the committee might know, there are many technologies that can treat water, but the cost of them is usually the main hurdle. It costs 10, 20, 30 times more than processing fresh water from our river systems. At the moment, the design of the pilot plant has been completed. Again, there was MTEF money granted to develop that pilot plant. The site has now been identified, and within the next 6 months that process of building the plant will commence. And in the following year we will then run that pilot plant to provide definitive cost studies for the cost of treating the water. So that also is proceeding well at this stage. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Makapama Kafula, R&D General Manager. I'm just going to take you through the highlights of some of the projects within the R&D divisions. The first one is the Northern Cape Semi-Precious Stone Project. This is MTA funded to the tune of 51.5 million rand, starting from this year. It's based in Northern Cape. The whole purpose of this project is to develop a geological beneficiation center in the Northern Cape, where the dry variety of semi-precious stones. And what we're trying to do is to ensure that we increase self-esteem of the local community, alleviate poverty, increase economic growth through employment. Again, the whole idea of developing this center is to ensure that we train the people within the region, and within that center they can be able to benefit some of the semi-precious stones that are found within the region. And again, we're trying to have a discussion with the Northern Cape government so that they get involved, because after 3 years somebody take over the center because we cannot continue the center. The next activity is what we call the Center for Mine Waste. And this again is another MTA funded project which starts next year. The reason now we came with this, it was more to, we don't have environmental lab currently in the country that's responsible to analyze some of the waste, especially mine waste. So what we did as the organization, we put some seed funding to prepare for the preparatory phase for this activity. And the idea about this project is to minimize the pollution caused by mine sector. And again, it's not only about the mining, we look at all forms of waste, but particularly the effect that waste has on scarce water resources. I mean, all these are the things of in terms of recycling some of the water, and then the treatment as well. Now, this project is not only MINTAC, we form partnership with universities and the Water Research Council as well, Water Research Commission. Now the next one is Nano Innovation Center, which is funded by the Department of Science and Technology. This program has been in effect since 2007. And then the NIC partnership between the universities, the WRC and MRC. And again, it's involved with human capital development, where students are trained and up to postgraduate level, and some of them are absorbed in the organization. The center, one of the highlights of the center is producing advanced gold nanorods, which are sold to some of the laboratories across the world as well. And we have a provisional South African patent currently. And we have developed an HIV antibody rapid diagnostic test, which is to go through all processes of approval. And we just formed a commercial partner with KNH Technologies, which is a black-owned company, for the malaria rapid diagnostic test to commercialize it, because they're at the stage that it needs to be commercialized. I think that will have not only within the country, again, you know, the challenge of Uganda as well in terms of malaria. It is a very cheap device as well. At the same time, there's a lot of papers that have been published in world-leading journals. Again, that's a measure of the center. One of our patent electrospinning device for electrospun polymer, which is mainly for fiber mats for removing pathogens. It's one of the things that we developed earlier. It's available in terms of trying to ensure that you take it beyond an NIP. The other section is the catalysis, which is again is another program funded by the Department of Science and Technology. There's a partnership between MINTEC and the University of Cape Town. I think we have listened to the Minister of Science, the Department of Science and Technology earlier this year. Is the one flagship program that's presented to ensure requesting for more funding. Currently, we sold more than 19 kilograms of the gold catalysis. And as I said, it has a catalysis competence center is now switched off to try and benefit some of the PGM metals. The one thing that we do in terms of community development program is called the Kenyan Community Development Project. Here it's about jewelry and beads manufacturing. The following projects that we have currently is the CDBN District Municipality, where 10 leaders were trained for that beads. Again, we even support them in terms of trying to draw, form their own SMEs. And we have the one handed by MQA, One Year Jewelry Leadership, which, I mean, learners are trained in Mintech with 9 learners, I mean, the unemployed ones which are trained at Mintech currently, and the 15 learners in Tabazimbi. And we have the, in terms of hotel manufacturing, we have the EPES Welfare Organization in KwaZulu-Natal, funded by PPC, Construction Industry Association, where 10 disabled learners are trained in pottery. And we have the Ibukemba Side Corporation Limited in Mafike, funded by the North West Department of Economic Development, where we are training 12 learners.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Mamke Gamshala, GM Corporate Services. The aim of my division, of course, is to invest on the pipeline development initiative to ensure that MidTech meets its requirements needs. We are investing in our bursary program, on full-time and part-time basis for undergraduate and postgraduate studies. We have our intensive program, which is undergraduate and postgraduate internship program, which we are partnering with EST, MQA, and the National Research Foundation. We have our in-service training for diploma students, which we provide them with the well-integrated learning. We also are hosting and facilitating off-site visits by schools, universities, and international delegations. This year, we've launched the graduate development program with one of our staff retention initiatives. And we have 12 graduates, with 12 science and engineering graduates. And we interface the graduates into the MINTEC environment on a 12-month rotational basis, where they start as their host division and rotates among different divisions within MINTEC. Training is combined on the job technical training as well as the formal short courses. We've also embarked on the Artisan Learnership Program, which is a joint venture between Government Unemployment Insurance Fund and MQA. It's a three-year training program where MET learners become artisan and get their trade certificate. The requirements for admission are metric or NSPE with mathematics and science, and this year we've received a grant for 11 learners, 7 being internal MINTEC staff, and 4 being external unemployed learners, some of them who are contributing to UIF priority research, and others who are recruited from FET colleges. We have also embarked on the MINTEC Universal Executive Program, and I'm also one of the people attending that program, which is also aimed at enhancing our management skills. We continuously get involved in STEM promotion, science, technology, engineering, and mathematical promotional activities, and we are involved in MINQuiz, which we host every year. We started with provincial competition, and ended up with the national competition, which was held on the 26th and 27th July 2012, where we also received corporate sponsorship. We are also involved in university open days, where we promote our bursary programs. We're involved in career fairs, and this year we also we're involved in the Turbo Girls Job Shadowing, which we are also partnered with the Department of Women, Children and People with Disability. And there are many, many more STEM promotion activities.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Saki. I'm the General Manager of Finance. Chairperson, as we have had my colleagues presenting, if it doesn't make money, we don't proceed with it. And we only invest in what makes money, or in some areas where there are certain outputs, we actually invest. My job is to run through the finances. From what my members, they've been talking a lot about all the things they're doing, the big stuff they're doing, ranging from furnaces, pilot plants, to batteries. It all translates to the money that we have, how we spread the money, the little money that we have. I first like to talk to the revenue that we have over 5 years, starting from 2009. You can see that the first budget talks to state grants, only state grants, and the second one, contract research and product and services. State grant is the money that we get directly from the DMR, which we are funded on. It currently ranges from around about 120 million from until we're expecting to be at around about 170 million in 2015. So you can see that is just almost a third of our total funding if you put all of them together. The next part is contract research. This is normally money that we get from companies, either government or even different private sector funding, that is mainly targeted or aimed at doing at conducting research. It's just below 100 million. And products and services, which is mainly money that we get through commercialization, that is just above 200 million. If you look very clear why we put the green block here, it's meant to compare ourselves between 2009 and 2013 going forward. 2009 is when we're still operating by two of the furnace. And as well before we were hit by the recession in 2010 and 11. So if you look what we're expecting to have in 2013-14 is almost in similar, almost expecting that our commercial revenue is going to be almost at the same target as it was in 2009, because we will be running back, we'll be running the Bay 2, or Bay 2 will be operational in the 2012-13 financial year, half of the 2013 financial year. If we go down to the next slide, where I'm just only looking at the state grant, how the state grant is allocated. You can see from here, this is how we spread our research. The 120 to 170 million that we have, we spread it across these different types of commodities. Gold, PGMs, uranium, and base metals, almost taking the big chunk of it, and then the various other commodities which are grouped in on the right hand side. You can see what is also most important in this graph is that if you see we spend normally less than 15 million or max 20 million in 2010, max less than 15 million per commodity. We do smaller projects. We try and split the grants that we have across all this type of commodities. So it's actually almost less than 15 million per the given type of commodities. And you can see with the fluctuation of the chart of the graph that from year to year we do some sort of prioritization. And then if there are certain projects that are not so important, then we shift the grant from one commodity to another. On the next slide is the revenue analysis overall, excluding the state grant. That is mainly commercial revenue. You can see that 29% of our revenue, of the commercial revenue, is local revenue, and then the 26% of the local revenue is government funding from other government departments or other government institutions. And then the bigger chunk, which is the red part, is mainly foreign revenue that we get. If you summarize it in all, out of the commercials that we have, 45% come from foreign, while the local part, the top part, is actually 55%. Foreign revenue is growing faster, at a very faster rate if you do a comparison between the previous year. Going to the expenditure side, honorable members, you can see that this is part of our staff cost, which has grown, but not that much, normally around about at least inflation rate. It's currently sitting at around about 230 million rand per annum, and we expect that it's not going to grow that much. It's going to grow up until 257 million in 2015. So in the coming years, we don't expect the staff to grow that much. We're trying to minimize the cost. Similarly, you can see the jump here. Mainly, it's the operational expenditure arising from Bay 2 operation. Going to the next slide is CAPEX. How are we spending our CAPEX, or where are we investing in terms of capital expenditure? Over the years, we have invested, we normally invest around 60 to 80 million annually on capital expenditure. So last year was a little bit about higher because of the Bay 2 operation. It was around about 81 million. But in the coming years, we're looking at about 60 million normally that we spend on equipment, on capital expenditure, right, annually. Some of it is funded, some of it's not. It's not really funded. If you look at the 2013, where I was going to the major projects that we think that is going to take above 2 million cables, is we still need to spend about 15 million, of which most of it was spent on the Bay 2 already in the first quarter of the year. We're hoping to do a clean room at AMD for about 30 million, and another capital capex of about 7 million, and then in 7 million also will be spent mainly on the building infrastructure. I think 2 million we're investing on the lift. We have about more than 10, say around about 13 lifts in the department at Mintec, and most of them are aging. So we embark in a process of making sure that we rent at least one lift annually, one or two lifts annually. I think those are the challenges that we still face. If we look at overall on the profitability of Mintec as well as the revenue and expenditure put together in the profitability, you can see that in the 2009, we had a profitability of about 40 million, and it went down to in 2010 and 11 where we made a loss and slight profitability in 2010, but 2011 we made a loss. In 2012, Chairperson, we will be seeing on the annual report we have made about 43 million in profit, and we think that in the coming years, which we are talking about the 13-14 or the 12-13, will be around 12 million to 24 million to about 34 million as well in the coming year. So, but it's very important to know that in the 2013. We originally projected that we'll hit the 500 million mark. But looking at the results, the first quarter results up till today, it were highly unlikely that we'll make the 500 million due to the fact that the base operation, which is expected to give us around about 60, 70 million, is not yet fully operational at this point. We're hoping that it's going to start being fully operational maybe end of August, September. So that 500 million, I doubt we're gonna make it in the 2012-13. Looking at the first quarter, no, the 500 million revenue. It's 500 million revenue. One will actually also argue the fact that the revenue is going to be increasing, but the profitability is not increasing at the same rate. I think one will realize that as and when we spend the operational cost for projects like Bay 2 and others, are very high, and as such, it reduces the profitability over the coming years. But we are not hoping that we'll make a loss, we'll still make a profit, but it might not be at that magnitude that we projected on earlier during the year. And then as the last slide, going concern, we are still very positive. We still predict that we can sustain ourselves for the next 2-3 years. There are a couple of other elements that we have only looked at. One, the liquidity. How much money we actually have. You can see that we had a liquidity of more than two in 2012, and we're predicting that we might have a slide above two in 2012-13. The only reason why you see that there is a decrease of the liquidity ratio is mainly because of the increase in liabilities, which is the deferred income. It's not necessarily fully deferred income, are receiving more money in advance, because as and when we operate with some of these companies, it becomes tough to pay, so we get more money in advance as well as in government before we can after they start the project. So I think that also enables us to plan much more better. And other than that, if you look at other elements of liquidity, including the order book and so forth, we still look very positive that in the next coming years we will be okay. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, just to conclude, you can see the financial figures, which look quite positive. But like other CEOs and presidents, there are a few things that make you not sleep at night. One of them is the staff turnover in MiTech. Currently, we lose something like 9% per annum of people who resign. What that translates to is that in 11 years, 100% of people who are at MiTech have gone away from MiTech. That's what it is. Every 11 years, we replace 100% the number of people at MiTech. That's why we started developing quite a number of this training that we're putting in, management training like that, to try to encourage people to stay long at MiTech. It's a big challenge. It's not MiTech only, but it's a big challenge for all of us, especially the R&D field. The other issue is the young of the institution. I'll give you a figure here. We checked in 2010 on the technical side of the institution. People of age between 40 and 50 were 156. Last year, 2011, there were only 138, meaning therefore that we also lose the older people who are matured, who understand the operations that MiTech at a rate of about 12% per year, which is a serious concern because these are the actual people, the people at the age of 40, 50, are actually the pillars of the institution who understand what MiTech does. Currently, our average age at MiTech is 38 years, which I see is a bit lower than what is expected. The last issue is, I call it the MTF principle. What is happening, our baseline funding, as I indicated on the first slide when I showed it, increases around the rate of inflation. Okay. And most of the money that we're getting now from Treasury is through the MTF system. However, the MTF system is project-based. Project-based in the sense that you have to motivate for a specific project. I mean, we motivated for the sub-D project, we got the money for 3 years. We motivated for Conroe, we have money for 1 year. You motivate for any other project, you'll get the money maximum 3 years. Okay? Which is a good system because therefore there's an outcome that you can look at and say, this is a project that was done funded by MTF and it is successful. Good, which is good. However, it's creating certain constraints with us at Intel. In the sense that we're an R&D organization, meaning that a person who works on a particular project, a person who works on a sovereign project, might not necessarily be able to work on another project. Okay? Meaning, therefore, that the money that we utilize allow us only to employ specific people who are specific on that project. And if that money is stopped or the project becomes continuous, it means those people have got no job going forward because they are job specific. Which therefore means that the more our baseline funding doesn't increase, it's only project-based increasing. It means we get to a stage where we say, as Ninja, we've got enough money for doing this specific project. Meaning therefore that we cannot grow the institution because we don't have a guarantee of having that fund beyond the project funding that we're receiving, which is a big predicament to us. However, it would have been better if this MTF funding always gets transferred and be part of the phase that, and you are assured that you always have that money because they can employ more graduates who come in and do different projects that way. So those are the only few issues I want to highlight at the edge. And the last one, before I thank the members for listening to us, is we've decided to showcase one of the projects that MiTech is involved in developing the community. And we've brought in some gifts for the members who are here, Jefferson, who are not all members of the community, but members who have come to listen and see what MiTech does. This is a typical example of what I hope the members have got their gift register here. Well, I think they have to write something. These are the gifts that we're giving members who are Obama. These are for Obaba. Each and every member of Obaba or Conor will get this gift. And Abu Mama will get this type of a gift. These are gifts that were made by people in one of the projects that MinTech is involved in. This is a glass bead that is a technology that MinTech has made, that technology. The people who make this thing will be trained by MinTech employees. So we want just to showcase members the good work that MinTech is able to do in order for a few people in the rural communities to be able to be owners of their own business. We train them and they become on their own at some point. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. MinTech certainly will have to disclose those gifts. How much, what value are they? Oh, it's less. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Honorable members, there's MinTech. The presentation, let us engage. Any take-ups?
Yes,
Chair. Honorable Big and Honorable Lucas. Honorable Soldo, Honorable Loriba. Yes, in that order.
Chairperson, I'm going to share with you a bit of that because your pages are. But I think that in the main, on the issue of the people that they are losing or the people that are being poached, I'm just wondering, until thus far, is there no way or no arrangement or no negotiations initiated to try and look at, well, I'm not saying you're making a lot of profit when it comes to the commercial part of you, but to try and see how you can best augment salaries, because I think the issues around salaries are difficult, vis-a-vis the qualifications that they have for them to be able to remain. I mean, I also wouldn't stay in an institution that I feel I'm not getting my money back for my qualifications for. Is there, or even with treasury for that matter, is there nothing that can be done, or no, if you're going to say some creative initiatives that have come up, this is a long-standing problem. Then the other question, the issue with the PGM group, I did get a sense that there is some work being done with some of the PGM groups, but now my question is, how coordinated is your work in terms of generating more employment rather than the loss that the PGM group companies or industries are experiencing? And if there is such an effort being made, is it well coordinated that all of them are involved as part of an area where there can perhaps be a change to assist the industries? Then the other thing, Chair, looking at their research work that's being done in terms of the, can I get to that point? I'm still schooling when it comes to some of the terms. The machinery, let me just say the machinery that is involved, the development of that machinery that you are developing, or the research work that is being done for perhaps commercial use or partnering with the private entities, is there perhaps no way that in terms of government in particular. I'm just looking at the fact that it's possible that if you go and do some water works for a particular organization, you'd probably charge less than what it would be for a private company that would do it with government. Like if you take water and environmental affairs. Now, is there no way of perhaps developing something that can be for your commercial use, because you need the money, isn't it? Between yourself and like water and environmental affairs in water purification projects, or are we still at a stage where you then say we are still little boys and girls to carry the load? I hope I'm understood, because I'm trying to get the correct word to explain what I'm trying to say. And in as much as the issue of commercialization, because we saw that graph of profitability there, it looks good. And if it gains for MinTech for better work, then why can't you have more of these government departments then supporting you to do business with you, where it becomes a prerogative that they first do business with another entity of government, which is MinTech, before they go elsewhere? Because if you go and look at the exorbitant prices that are charged by these private companies for water purification projects, you certainly can't tell me the government will not gain by making it preferable change for MINTEC to get the relevant support and that money going to MINTEC instead. That's all, Chair.
Honourable Lucas, thank you very much.
I think I really sympathise with you guys for the smart turnover, because it's happening all around and it's difficult, and especially when you're giving the better you deliver, the more the people come and vouch from you. So it's difficult. They know that there is a source for them. Rehabilitation, I hope you're not succeeding, because this is a major problem. And most of the time there's onerous, and you're going to look for funds, and you're spending resources which you haven't got so much. So I think that's a serious one also. I was really shocked at the alternative smelting method. I'm very pleased, because I'm sure that will be at a smaller scale and could be better used for smaller companies. Because now, if you're a small farm of tandem, you have to take your stuff to the big purchases, and then you lose profitability. So I hope that's going to encourage people. The other one was analyzing rock. I think if we can do that, it will be a major saving, because you crush so much because you don't know what's happening, and then you only sort out afterwards. So it will help help very much. Water treatment is a very interesting one also. And I just wanted to ask a question. Have you looked at purifying the seawater? What are we doing about it? Because that is a force that could be used if we can develop. The beneficiation center, I'm glad as now. Mr. Mabuzulu showed us somewhat of, gave us an appetite of what we're going to see a little later. And that is a success. The other one is, and the other thing of training for 3 years, I think that's realistic. I was totally against the 6 months crash courses, because when you think you know, you know nothing. If you serve a bit of shift, then it's at the end, you've got something, and you can be reemployed somewhere else. So that is something positive. the other one, the funding. I don't know. But most of you know that how we feel. We think something that is good, like MINTEC, which is producing and is showing its muscle and it's in operation. And I know you took a dive when things were tough, but you've come up again. Dusted yourselves and come up again. If there could be a method, Mr. Chairman, of how could this be financed, I wasn't too sure when it's important. Funding of 45%. It's just like, why? We should look at this, because this is beneficial for the whole of South Africa, and we need to do these things seriously. The other thing is just, I do not understand. What's the clean room? I didn't know what the clean room.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sondo.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I must add my words in thanking MINTEC on this presentation. It shows that they are making serious efforts to keep themselves credible as an entity and also sustainable. The first question would be, because research and development of efficient mineral processing technologies are one of your core businesses, as the nation we are looking for 5 key strategic minerals over which the state would be a guardian. How long would it take you as a research entity to tell us what are these South African strategic minerals price of it that the country would depend on to repair or to deal with the level of poverty and level of unemployment. One would say through beneficiation and arguments. But the question is, what would be these five strategic minerals, and how long would it take you to research and tell us what are the key strategic minerals in the country? I'm saying this on the backdrop that the price of gold is declining. Gold might not be a strategic mineral, but definitely a country that is endowed with minerals might be having strategic minerals that would sustain the nation. The other one would be on your involvement on derelict and ownerless mines. One is taking, we are dealing here with mines that are not owned by anybody. Mines that are in a state that we find them in. The state and yourselves and other partners that are involved in rehabilitating these are losing resources. Are these mines, the number of these mines growing or decreasing as you rehabilitate them? I'm looking at a situation where people would see a gap here and try to run away from responsibilities of rehabilitating these mines and not rendering them ownerless. That is one. The second one on the same, because you are operating in farm areas also, what cooperation do you enjoy, or what hurdles do you come across when you rehabilitate mines that are in farm areas? I'm looking at this, trying to find the two sides of the coin. Sometimes the farmer would not want us to go and mine in his farm, his or her farm. When you rehabilitate, is the farmer saying to you, please come and rehabilitate? Just want to check on that one. Your rehabilitated mines so far, are those areas ready for grazing or agricultural use, whatever? When you have a rehabilitated mine, what is it ready for? You've got your environmentalists and your other skills. I think we were in one area where a rehabilitated area looked like as it was before, and people would bring back snakes that previously belonged there, and bears and everything. Is that possible with you? I was happy, the next one would be, I was happy when you re-employed 19 retrenched staff, but it was after 3 years. And the interest is, how did you keep track on them? Because at least 3 years is too long a period for an entity from which skills are being coached so much. How were you lucky to get these people back? But what I'm interested in is your tracking record of your business, your trained staff. And I must say that I'm happy for that. The last one would be on corporate services. where you are saying that you are not females. They are resigning. And what's the matter? What training are you giving that is not attractive to women? And can you stop me from suspecting that as men, as male employees?
I'm not treating them.
I don't want to get into that, but really, what is it that is not attracting women in MinTech? You've established a building which is a very good environment now, as we speak, at least. Really, it would have been an actor that would keep them in MinTech. What is it that is driving them away, if you could be
just telling us?
Let me stop that, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lorimer.
As always, MinTech appears to be doing some very interesting things and appears to be doing them well and, more importantly, profitably. So congratulations on that. First of all, the rare earth plant. What's the key to making this happen? Second question on that is, are people mining rare earth metals already and exporting them? And if you do build a refinery, how much more of that mining will happen? And then, if it goes ahead, how will MinTech make money out of this? And will it be significant money? Staying on the technology with Stavin, without being too technical, could you give us an idea of what technology you've decided on for your plant? Does it have significant cost savings in water treatment? Has it been done before? Who would roll it out? Is that going to be our solution to acid mine drainage? And once again, will MinTech make money? And then similar questions on the sensor-based sorting. Have you got patents on any of that? And do you expect to make any sales? And in all of this, are we going to see hikes in revenue? And are they going to be significant? And when will they happen? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I saw Mr. Ngomizulu quite recently indicate in the media that we might be needing a state and mining exploration company. So if he did make this comment, I'd like to see what interest MinTech would have in a state and mining exploration company. I just thought that I was looking for that link. Now, there might be a link. I'm not sure whether it lies in the R&D or whether it lies in some other revenue interest Mr. Nkomazulu has in mind. So I'd just like some clarity on that. Thank you.
Honourable members, thank you very much. I think before MinTech responds to all of those questions, let's take tea before it gets cold. 10 minutes, and then we'll come back. MinTech, please respond to the barrage of questions. Just for you to recharge. Head over to MinTech to respond to the questions that have been asked thus far.
Thanks, Chair. We will share the question, but I'll start by answering a few, and then my colleagues will allow my colleagues to help you with some of the questions. The first one I would like to address, the issue that I would like to address was what is intent and what is it that intent? I'm applying a certain question indirectly. I think we have to be careful in defining intent. Intent was not established to make money for the state. Okay, that's a fact that should be aware of. Mintel was established to develop certain technologies in order to sustain the South African mining industry. That should be our core value we expect from Mintel. If ever we make any surpluses at the end of the year, it's not because we're established to make surpluses. We're established to make technology. I had an argument with some of the board members. It's better about the same thing, that we tend to see if Mintel has made surpluses, therefore the performance scores that persons get become high. It's a wrong principle altogether. We are not therefore making money. We should look at, even if we didn't make any surplus, went to a loss, we should look at how many technologies has Mintel developed, rather than looking at making money. We make money in order to survive, but the main aim of Mintel is not making money. The second question is actually two questions that I'll combine them into one. The question was on the refugee. How did you be able to trace them? And the other question is why women are resigning at Mintec. I think Mintec has become a family. We've in the past 4 years that I've been at Mintec, we've tried to make it a family, you know, rather than a working environment. We're trying to make it as a family so that we all put together. And in a family, when somebody has left, you try and find out where has he gone, why did he leave. Okay? So with the people who were retrenched at Mintel, unfortunately, were at the operator level. Okay? It's a low level at Mintel. And when we retrenched them, we informed them that if the day was, I think members must understand, we were not retrenched because we didn't have money or salary to pay them. We could afford to pay them a salary. The problem is that they didn't have work to do. When the project stopped, the project where they were working stopped because we didn't have anybody interested in that project anymore. When it stopped, we first started by putting them in the other division and doing all the menial jobs until they finished all the menial jobs that was there, and they were just sitting, literally sitting. So we retrenched them. But when we retrenched them, we said, the day the business comes back, we will go and get you so that you come and work. As a family, you don't forget your brother. So we know all of them. Those, I think, one or two have got jobs somewhere else, and one died. So we've taken all of them. We know them. We know what they are doing. And most of them still don't have jobs. That's why we're able to recall them back to work. When it comes to females resigning, I think we have to look at this in a context. In general, at Mintec, the percentage of women at Mintec, I think, is around just close to 30%. So meaning therefore that there are more, 70% is male. There are more males in Mintel. So when males, and when you look at the resignation, it's almost 50-50. That is 50% males and 50% female. But 50% of sales is high compared, you know, it's easier to fail than 50% of the male. That's where the problem is. But at this level, at a high level, I can actually tell you exactly, each and every lady that resigned at Mintel, where is that person? We had one who resigned and got a job in the UK. Obviously, we cannot compete with the person who wants to emigrate from South Africa to the UK. One went to the UK. One resigned and went to Angola. Okay, had a better salary than we could afford at Mintec. One resigned because she was at the childbearing age. And she resigned at the lab committee, what you call lab committee. She had a lab committee, and then she decided to go and stay with the children at home. She's a child that was born very late. So she resigned in order to be able to stay with the children at home. So we understand all this. You know, all these circumstances are unique. It's not because of anything that the CEO is doing. It's only that there are circumstances, and we know all those circumstances. And then the two other questions I would like to deal with them briefly is the issue of five strategic minerals. I sometimes get scared of airing or talking about issues here, in the sense that officially it's not our domain. We advise. We would be advising the department to come up with the strategic minerals and how we can interpret for strategic minerals. It's coming through the department. However, I've made, in my capacity as a citizen of this country, I've made comments on strategic minerals. And I think it would be good for me to say it to the committee, but that's my personal opinion, with a consultation at MINTEC. The way we are looking at it at MINTEC was, we're looking at three groupings of strategic minerals. One grouping with your energy minerals, but without the energy minerals, there's nothing you can do. Okay. In this instance, we've got your coal and uranium. And
what else?
And thorium. We've got thorium, coal, and uranium. As energy minerals, because you cannot do anything without energy minerals. However, we understand the problems that people have got with coal, and we are saying, therefore, going forward, you have to look at clean coal technologies in order to make it clean. But those are the energy minerals. And then the second grouping that we had is what I tend to economic minerals, okay? Which is your, I have here under economic minerals, you've got your gold, your PGMs, and to an extent your diamond. These are the minerals that make South Africa to have a better economic leverage in the world. Whether we like it or not, some people will always look at gold as a haven. Okay? If you look at it now, when there's a problem in the U.S., for example, when your U.S. dollar goes down, the gold price goes up. And that will remain like that, because everybody wants to gold as a reserve. And then the last grouping is what I call the steel-making one. Because you always need to make an infrastructure. So steel-making minerals will have to form part of the strategic minerals. So I've got those groupings of strategic minerals. How the department comes with it, but I can assure you now, I don't see anybody going against this idea, but the department will come back. Again, the other issue I wanted to raise was the issue of a state exploration mining company. I'm wearing many hats in my life. And many of those hats that I'm wearing are part of my work that I enjoy doing for the benefit of my country. I'm an interim chairperson of the state mining company, African Exploration Finance and Mining Company. So in some other instances, I talk on behalf of the benefit of that state-owned organ. Fortunately, they are all state organs. And I was doing a press there's a member who was also there. I hope she supported what I was saying that day. And most of what I said, honorable members can just view YouTube and will get the true story of what I said. But what I actually talked about was that, among other things, was that we're seeing a decline of exploration in South Africa. And I've been fortunate enough that at the beginning of my career, which started in 1979, 25 November 1979, I became an exploration geologist for a state-owned mine company. And there are quite a number of projects and there are quite a number of findings that company found. Some of them were founded by me in Jefferson. I found it a kyanite in KZN. Unfortunately, nobody is interested in mining it. And I was fortunate to find the coal in near a town called Dubadua. I think everybody now knows a mine called Sokele Mine. That coon, that was discovered by this man here. Yeah, that mine was funded, that coon that they are mining was funded by this man. Nobody knew it before. All that is written down is some kind of coal, the coal that is found next to the town to Adua, not the one that they are mining. So I understand what a state exploration company can do for the country. Those findings that we found are founded in the early 80s. And now producing mines today. We've got another one, which was founded by the company, the same company I worked for. I think it's called Zambwane Coal. Was also one of the projects that was founded by a state-owned exploration company. So I was talking in that context, that if you see exploration in the country not happening, if you could have a state-owned exploration company,
to find those, to have those findings and sell them to the public. Then you see activity like your son Kele and your Walcom going forward. So it was in that context. And I do believe in it can happen to us. We did it. So I think it can happen. I'll therefore ask my colleague Makapa to talk about the clean room, and the other colleagues, Alan and Peter, to share on submarine, rehab, and rehabilitation.
Okay, before that, what is
it used for? It's used as a filament, for example, on things like your iron. It uses the filament, what is the high temperature material? So it's used in high temperature things.
Cody? Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'll just give what a clean room is. I mean, I think I spoke of the two devices that we are at the commercial phase, which is the malaria kit and HIV/AIDS. So for you to manufacture that, just to be in a space that doesn't have any interferences. So it means when you get into those facilities, you have to cover almost everything, including your shoes and your mouth as well, to make sure that not any other air that is getting into those facilities. So it's a very controlled atmosphere. So that's what the clean room facility is.
Thank you. Okay, that was a very quick, easy answer. I wish I had that one, not the ones that I've had. I'm going to group my responses into three categories, into water, the rare earth refinery, and then rehabilitation. And I'll try and address all the questions under those categories. And please, if I have forgotten a specific question, please just drop me. First of all, water. I mean, I firmly believe that water is going to be the biggest issue facing the global mining industry, bar none. And this is going to determine what the industry looks like in a century's time. So that's by far the most important issue. Not only effluent and contamination, but sources of clean water. So the very first one is the seawater desalination, as you mentioned. That's a very established technology. It's used all over the world, and including in South Africa, certain municipalities use it. And to supply mostly municipal drinking water requirements, but also in certain parts of the world, industrial applications. So, for example, in Chile, they do actually desalinate water for the copper mining industry. But it's a very expensive technology. It's obviously the transportation of the water is a big issue. So if your mine is sitting at the ocean or so, you're not going to desalinate seawater and pump it all the way to the sea. So it's really only applicable to those mines that are adjacent to the sea and have high water requirements. First pride is in fact using salt water without desalinating. So for example, some of the diamond mines use salt water rather than desalinating. But it's a very established technology. Big companies that supply commercial so-called reverse osmosis, they can produce drinking water from seawater. The problem is it uses a lot of electrical energy in doing that. So MAPIC don't have any activity because it would be reinventing the wheel. The next questions pertain specifically to Saturn. And Honourable Bemba, you asked the question, what technology are we using? In fact, we're starting our development from a technology we developed. So we're not looking at, in this instance, the problem and saying, let's try and select the best technology to address the problem. We actually had a technology, and we say this technology, Savman, is a unique technology that is patented and owned by Matec, and it will have application in certain niche areas of acid mine drainage. Acid mine drainage is usually lumped together as if it's one source of contaminated water. It's not. There are different types of acid mine drainage. And again, it's unlikely there's going to be one technology that is the panacea to all the problems. It's more likely that different technologies, certain of them will be better suited to very large volumes, like this basins. Others might be better to treat very small, isolated on-mine applications, and it depends on the severity of the contamination. What we're saying is that this state, Savman, Mintex technology, looks very promising in certain niche areas, and they're taking it to the next level. But we're not going to say that this is going to be the key to solving all South Africa's acid mine drainage water problems, because I believe it's going to be using a combination of technologies. The CSR, for example, has also got the internally developed technology. And at this stage, we just don't know which is better for which particular niche applications. How are we going to roll out that technology, and how is Mintec going to make money out of it? we'll do it like other technologies that we've licensed. It is a patented technology, and we will look, when we've established exactly where what its market niche is, we'll establish the best way to roll it into the market. At this stage, we've actually got a cooperation agreement, as the CEO said, with Veolia. Veolia, in fact, Alan said it's one of the world's largest industrial water treatment companies. In fact, it is the world's largest water treatment company by far. So, in fact, they might be a very good partner to roll it out globally as well as South Africa. But we'll look at, we haven't committed ourselves totally at this stage, and we'll see exactly what the market is, but we'll probably license it out to somebody who will construct the plants. And just not in that sort of engineering contracting business. We'll make our money from royalties on the application of the technology exactly as we do with smelting technologies. I think that covered all of the water issues. Have I left out anything? Okay, then moving on to rare earths. The question is, what do we need to actually make this happen now? It's actually a number of jigsaw pieces we have to get into place. If we just look at the rare earth businesses being mines that are unable to get off the ground at the moment because they don't have a natural off-taker for their product from those mines. And those mines, in fact, are all over Southern Africa, not only in South Africa. That's the first block. The next block would be a refinery. The third block would be the downstream manufacturing, downstream applications of rare earths. Now, the missing link at the moment is the refinery. So as opposed to most of the applications that we look at, when you've got a big ore deposit somewhere, and you think, how do you exploit that ore deposit? Well, we need a refinery sitting on the ore deposit. This one's a bit different. We're actually saying we've got a number of mines. None of them are big enough to support a refinery. We see that South Africa can play a role in the downstream fabrication industry, but we're missing a central, we're missing this link of having a refinery. Southern Africa does not have world-class resources. We are one of world-leading resources. We are going to be one of the pooled five countries that have, will probably be number four, number five in the world. So we have to be very careful about the role that we play. We have to get the jigsaw pieces in place of having access to feed material, so a number of mines have to start producing. Capital, we do not believe is a problem. If it's a good project, money will be there. Technology, we do have the technology to do it. Access to the market, we're talking to Koreans, Japanese, and certain European off-takers of the material that will take off most of the material, but we'll make sure in the project that we allow sufficient for the development of the South African industry so we never end up in the situation of having mortgaged our resources. We need to get all of these components together, so we are talking to the strategic partners in a venture like this. There are a number of individual jigsaw pieces to get into. Plus, the biggest problem is linking the mine's production with the requirements of electric refining, the timing, the ownership, etc. Are any companies mining and producing at the moment? No. South Africa produced in the 70s and 80s. In fact, it's a byproduct from Richards Bay Minerals, the treatment of the minerals as, but stopped producing when the Chinese took dominance of the world market, and also when the sensitivity to radio, transporting radioactive material, because rare earths are usually associated with thorium, which is radioactive. So if you transport the material in a raw form, you're normally transporting radioactive material around the planet. So we stopped in the 70s and 80s. At the moment, we don't produce anything. There are certain operations, like Steenkamp Kraal, that are close to operation because of one old mine which has been started up again. But again, until they get an offtake for the material, they won't start up production. So now there's nobody producing at the moment. Will there be more in the future? Well, there are a number of operations. Mintec, as was earlier said, in fact, is doing more research into rare earths than anybody else in the world. We're working on nearly every project throughout the world at the moment on rare earths. In Southern Africa, there are probably about 10 projects that we're involved with that are various stages of development. So it certainly will be mines in future, providing there is a refinery. That was the rare earth issue. How do we make money again? Well, we've got there's two areas. We're saying that Mintec has initiated the concept of the central refinery. and have the technology, but we do not only want to be a technology provider, it will in fact be analogous to us being a junior resource company. We own a deposit and we're expecting partners to buy into the concept. In the same way, Mintec has got the concept of a refinery. In fact, it will be a Mintec SA Inc. type concept, and we're expecting private companies to earn their way into that project. And initially, we're looking at Mintec taking a carried interest in the, a small carried interest in the project. The implementation. Let's say the first, maybe the best way to start up is it growing or is it, sorry, the Honourable Member asked the question, I don't see it much, but the question was, is it increasing or is it decreasing? Is the problem increasing or is it decreasing? Well, in fact, it's probably increasing. The, all over the world, the problem is not so much the site of large mining operations or large companies. It's actually a multitude of very small operations. And when you start getting into the very small artisanal type operations, you even have more of a problem. By far the biggest problem in Europe, for example, is not the base metal or precious metal, iron ore, in copper, any of the big things. It's rust dust aggregate. It's every few kilometers where you've got a little quarry somewhere for producing building material. Those are creating the problem now. And so it's the small operations, etc., and the number of sites are actually creating a problem. And normally, a bit of a generalization, the bigger companies tend to follow the regulations and make provision for rehabilitation now. They didn't in the past, but now they're doing it. It's the very small companies that aren't. And the problem again is, the question was, can companies run away from their responsibilities? Do they see the face current activity in rehabilitation as being an easy way just to run away from the problem? Absolutely. Rehabilitation doesn't make money. So a company is natural. They're going to do the least they can, depending on social expectations, requirements of their shareholders, their perception of them as a company. So the big companies, generally, it's not a problem. They apply world-based practice. They're very conscious of image worldwide. It's the small companies that are the problem. And the easiest way for them to run away from their problem is to go into liquidation and walk away. And there's nothing that can be done. It all depends on the enforcement of the environmental impact plan that they submitted and the permit that was originally granted. And mines are also required to contribute to rehabilitation provisions. And it depends on the enforcement of ensuring that there's adequate funding in has been provided for. That if they do walk away or go into liquidation, that in fact there is money to rehabilitate the operation. So it all comes down to enforcement. The other question was, farmers, what sort of cooperation do we get? Is it a cooperation or obstruction? Generally, farmers, we haven't had a single instance of a farmer not wanting to cooperate. Farmers always want to cooperate because it's a mess on the land. It's an erosion problem, the holes that their livestock fall into, etc. So rehabilitation, in fact, creates surface, usable surface ground for them. So always the farmers cooperate very well. The problem is when we actually get sites within an urban or developed area, the municipalities, local communities are, let's say, integral between the sites. And I understand that you saw the Sweeney. And that's very typical where you've got mine operations that have now moved into artisanal mining and you've got people that are making bricks from the clay and are mining the coal. So a lot of people are using those operations and the communities developed into green operations. It requires relocation, etc. This is the biggest problem that we face. Mintec is not well equipped to handle issues, social issues of relocation, housing, etc. So if we've got a clean site and there's no social problem, we are well equipped to move in and technically rehabilitate the site. That's the biggest obstacle that we face. Rehabilitate the use of the ground. Yes, we can rehabilitate it to whatever the requirement is, and we've done this. In certain cases, where it's from the size of the mountain, you've just rehabilitated it to a point where it's as self-sustaining as possible, so that the natural vegetation, and you reseed it, and you create these premier species and everything, and you hope it gets to a position where it no longer is subject to erosion. That's the basic way. But if somebody wants it transformed My apologies. I think I'm addressing some of the questions you asked about rehabilitation. I'm just dealing with the question of what purpose is can the cow be used for? Grazing, agriculture, etc. Absolutely. If that's a requirement, we rehabilitate it to that. So we either rehabilitate it to its original vegetation, but if we can reach a compromise with the farmer or the municipality, we've rehabilitated certain sites so they level, so they can be used for a park in a town. For example, we fenced it, we've grassed it, we've grazed in irrigation. We've prepared the ground so that it is suitable for construction afterwards if there's a development. We've looked at selecting sites that can be used for bamboo planting because that was an opportunity that the DMR was looking at in one instance. And in other cases, we just take it back to the original state. We have to be a bit careful though, because if you rehabilitate this on the side of the mountain for natural vegetation, if a farmer then goes and clears that and wants to use it for something else, there is always a problem of exposing that asbestos. It's all economics. We cover it to 500 millimeters. If you know somebody going to build houses on it, you might want to put it a lot deeper down. But yes, we can do anything. We have done anything for the different applications.
I think that's the covered.
I think you misunderstood the EBOS community program.
Yes.
The community program.
Ah, sure.
They are told us the community.
Yes.
A typical example that we
should have. Okay. Yes, I touched on it very briefly. I said that the farmers always cooperate because it's always in their interest to have the problem sorted out. The problem is actually where we've got conflicting local community involvement. And I mentioned Ujeri, for example, where some of the community are actually getting value out of the sites, clay and coal, etc. And now some of the community don't want to see those sites rehabilitated or covered up because they're using it, it's their livelihood. So they must, what's more important to them in the short term, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, in the short term, you're making money out of it. You're mining coal, you're picking coal, you're sorting up lumps, you're digging clay and exposed operations. If we go in and we level and we cover everything with topsoil and revegetate, it's the end of livelihood of a few people. So now it's weighing up the interest of a few people who derive value from it against the greater community who is suffering from acid mine drainage and exposure and hazards, etc. These are the problems. Now, one of the specific examples of a problem that we are facing at the moment is where the perception of the local community is that here is a Mintek, a big rich company from Johannesburg with a big budget, who's coming and spending money on rehabilitation. A lot of those people have suffered for generations from the effects of the money, for example, the asbestos. So they've now suffered from the effects of the mining. You still have the environmental damage in the area. They see a company coming down with a lot of money, spending, clearing up the problem. And the natural thought is, well, how do I get some value out of this, some benefit? The problem is most of the work is, as shown by that photo, 90% of the cost is heavy earth-moving stuff. So it's not work that you can very easily give to the local community. The second thing is, if it's covering a shaft, a diggings, and asbestos, the last thing you want to do is to have a low-skilled level local community involved with something that's going to further expose them to the hazard. It has to be done under very controlled conditions. So this is something we have to be very careful about. Some of the specific problems we face, and I'll give you two very specific examples. The one is up at Bench, where we had a company awarded the contract to do a very large rehabilitation on the side of the mountain. The local community said, well, we want employment out of this. We encouraged the local contractor to employ as many people from the local community as possible. He employed about 40. To fill Gabion, these wide baskets that you get on, if you see this, if you've got a seam and it needs to be protected from erosion, you see you've got these galvanized mesh wire baskets, big square baskets, so you get full with rock, you'll see it from the side of the motorway and the side of rivers. So we employed them to load those gabions, which is a very good job for it. It's not hazardous, you don't need skills, it employs a lot of people, and it's temporary jobs. As soon as the contractor employed the 40 people, week later, you had two other horses in the area, and that you've employed it from that community, and what about our community? And it resulted in demonstrations, barricades,
into the ongoing site. We paid standing time to the contractor. We employed the people. Last week, the job was being finished. They had to do exit medicals, as is required by law. Last week, the work was again stopped because the workers that had been employed demanded 12,000 rand each as a once-off bonus because of the risk that they'd been exposed to during the work that was done previously, and refused to do exit medicals. So again, we were stopped from proceeding, and until this problem has been sorted out. So I think that's an example of the sort of community issues that we face. And as I said, MedTech is not best placed to handle those sort of issues. We engineers, scientists, technical people, if we want to level a hill, we'll level a hill. But if we need to negotiate with the local community, we're not the best.
Okay, let me start with the question of PGMs and really the work that MedTech has been doing and the coordination within the industry to try and fix the current problems that have been experienced. I think first let me put it into perspective. The main reason for the current problem in the industry is that demand has dropped. So there's an oversupply of platinum group elements in a global industry. One of the main reasons for that is the economic problems in Europe, where they mainly use diesel vehicles, and platinum is mainly used in auto catalysts for diesel vehicles. There's not a lot MedTech can do in the short term about that. Obviously, anything it can do and anything that the industry can do to increase the usage of PGMs will help in the medium to long term. There are a number of initiatives, including the Platinum Development Initiative under the Department of Science and Technology, that are looking at that. But it's a long-term initiative. It's not something that's short-term. It's not easy to come up with ideas and solutions that are suddenly going to take up 10, 20, 30% of global production of platinum. So at that level of coordination, at that level of work, there is some coordination. In terms of the work MedTech is doing, and particularly with the con roast, there isn't really any coordination, because what we're proposing is competitive to the four main producers. As one of the members indicated, currently those four producers have the rest of the industry and any emerging producer at ransom. If you want to sell your concentrate for smelting, you sell it under the conditions that those four producers dictate upon you. The Conrad technology is an alternative. It's an alternative that somebody can start up, put in a plant with the Conroast technology and start producing themselves. So in terms of Conroast, there isn't coordination. And it's purely because it's a competitive type of situation. I think in terms of the sector starting to interact and discuss solutions to the current short-term problems, clearly there is coordination led by the department, disposal teams, etc., that are looking at that. So I think in answering the question, one has to separate the long-term possibilities which are increasing demand from the short-term issues which are driven by demand. Moving on then to the question of equipment that's been developed by MedTech or others, and particularly with respect to salmon, and shouldn't it be cheaper for government entities to work with MedTech? I think absolutely. And certainly we try and do that. There are some coordination efforts, there are some additional ones that are coming on stream. Perhaps also just to go back to one of the opening statements that the CEO made, it's not MedTech's intention to necessarily be profitable, that's not our driver. If salmon is seen to be a solution that can have a make a major difference in South Africa, certainly I'm sure that MedTech would be willing to talk to government departments and government entities, if necessary, even to make that technology available for free. What we won't do is allow a company like Veolia to make lots of money on the technology and MedTech and South Africa gets nothing. So certainly we'll work and do work with other government entities. Then the final question is on the sense about sorting and what's the business case for Mintec. Do we have patents? In this particular case now, a lot of that technology was developed in Europe. It was developed for waste retreatment and waste sorting, recycling. So in many shops in Europe, you'll take your garbage, your tins, your bottles, whatever, and you'll throw them in a hopper. And at the back end of that is equipment that sorts the metal from the glass, from the plastic, etc. Now, essentially, what we're doing is trying to take that technology and migrate it into the minerals sector. So Mintec's role is not so much on the development of either the sensors or the equipment, but it's applying our knowledge of the minerals sector to try and apply those technologies from a different industry into the minerals sector. Again, at the end of the day, it's probably not something that Mintec will make money from. We won't have royalty flows or anything like that. We'll obviously make money out of advising companies on the application of that equipment, but it could make a huge difference to the mining sector and the industry in general. And certainly we believe that that's one of the important roles of Mintec, to stimulate the sector to make it better for everybody, even if it's not hugely profitable for us. Thank you.
All right. That seems to take care of the questions that have been asked to Mintec. And indeed, I think one area that two areas basically, the beneficiation center in Northern Cape. You said that you are in discussions with the government of the Northern Cape to take over that center. Is there a likelihood that that would happen? And if so, do they have the know-how in terms of running that center? Who will be running it? If we turn it over to the Northern Cape government. The other issue is to do with the funding levels of Mintec. I think you've mentioned quite an important situation, Mr. Gomezulu, where you said that Mintec at the moment is dependent at commercial work that you are doing. If you don't do the commercial work, your revenue streams are going to be very limited and you will be unable to meet your demands and requirements. Now, we are discussing not only within Parliament, but outside of Parliament, in the structures of the ruling party, that the research institutions in the country must be capacitated. We were using, for an example, Council for Geosciences when we were discussing the SIMS report in the last policy conference. And we're hoping that debate will come through to Parliament, because on one hand you can't be building a developmental state and on the other hand you have state institutions that are weak and dependent on commercial activities. So you need to strike in the necessary balance in ensuring that funding, in particular for the research and development institutions, is increased. And I think National Treasury has got a sense in this area. They did welcome the deliberations. So we're hoping that you might see a difference in terms of the next round of your MTFD discussions with National Treasury. But it will have to start within the department itself. Because it's not only in your field of research and development where we see a lack in terms of capacity. As we're doing oversight, we're coming across this serious situation of lack of capacity for the department to enforce the laws that we pass in Parliament. For instance, the example was in the KZN recently. And you could see that number of mining companies, they relax when it comes to compliance. Because they know that nobody is going to come around and check them at a particular period, because they are aware, acutely aware, that there's lack of capacity there. So those are some of the things that we'll be looking at going forward. But can you respond to this issue of the Northern Cape?
Thanks, Chair. I think that's a very difficult question. I was not expecting that. But, Chair, we had a meeting with the provincial government, and the whole idea of having a meeting with them was to try to identify where we can help the site, the beneficiary center, in terms of their strategy as a province. And I think out of those meetings, I think that's part of their plan as well, to start something. This is going to help the Department of Minerals, the Honorable Joe Block section. So I think the time that is just starting now. I mean, the biggest problem is the time that is just preempt. I mean, taking over and ensuring that the center is sustainable, because we cannot be, we are very just established to ensure that training is done, people benefit from it and stuff. But somebody has to take over, because we cannot, we need to move to another province to continue the work that we do as part of our community development. So some that we're still engaging, we have not yet, you know, verified, but we're still in discussion with the your province in terms of how they'll take over the center.
Just to add, Chair, we are trying to use the same principle that we reviewed in the Juela reflection of, if we get the funds, we train the people, and at the correct time when we think that they're at a level of taking over, then we slowly move our way. We'll use the same principle and we'll all dump it to them. If they're not ready, we'll continue. Once we start seeing that they've got their footing into it, then we'll come in. The last one from my side, Chair, I would like to appreciate what you've just said on the finances. I only hope that at some point the government will come to the thinking that those who perform must be rewarded. I mean, with institutions like your Mintec, who have been performing for so many years, and when it comes to the slice of MTF, we're all considered the same, whether you had a disclaimer or you never had a disclaimer. In most cases, those people who had disclaimers and bad audits are the ones who get a high share of money. And people who are honest and who are doing their work good are those who are actually more criticized. Everybody's got an interest to see what is the fund that you can get from the tech. I think that's the wrong attitude that we're having, because we're really discouraging the people who are working. There's a common saying that better salary, which is the wrong thing, you know, because if you continue to be better, which is don't say there's a seed, then now why is so far ahead?
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we would move on, but we need to adopt this strat plan. We're waiting on Honourable Mjobo. She requested to go somewhere. Who teams? Because there is no having those hostiles into this room now. Yes, then we're going to thank you now, Wintek, and release you, but we want to release you having concluded your business. Then, Honorable Members, we're going to take all the minutes. There's quite a number of sets of the minutes. I hope that you have had time to read them, and also we need to consider them and adopt them in this meeting, because they will have an impact on our application for study. In the application process, You get checked whether you've got outstanding work, have you got legislation that is outstanding, have you got minutes that are outstanding, have you got reports that are outstanding, and all of those, you get asked on them. But just one question, Secretary, I don't know if you are going to be able to deal with this, Ayanda. These minutes run up to the 30th of May. There's nothing around you. I don't know if you've done this. If I can fix it, June. End of May. Okay. So in the next meeting, we'll deal with the set of minutes from June up to date. Because this thing of minutes being delayed for too long. Last time when we didn't have disturbances in the secretariat arrangement, we used to adopt minutes every fortnightly. For instance, today's minutes will be adopted in the meeting after next week. So every time, you just leave a week in the gap so that secretary can prepare properly the minutes. If it's short meetings, we're expecting that in the next meeting, let's adopt those minutes so that we are up to date. But we understand what problems did we have in as far as that is concerned. Whilst we are waiting on Honorable Mdomo, I'll just table the minutes. When she arrives, we can then start with the minutes report, adopt it, and then adopt the minutes as they come. If that is in order with you, let's start so that we don't waste too much time on idling. The first set is that of the 29th of February. Are there any comments on the first page? Oh, okay. She has now joined us. She has now joined us. She has now joined us. And you don't have 29 February. Where do they start? No, there must be a set before that. Yeah, if I told you, I've got copies here. But for now, let's go back to the report of MINTEC, now that we do have the necessary quorum. Can we get somebody to move the strat plan and somebody to second? We can promise you, MINTEC, that in the future, we are going to prioritize you. For instance, you're going to be tabling your strat plans when in September. The annual report. Yeah, in September, you will be forming part of the priority before the end of the year in terms of you coming to talk through that. Once your strat plans are worked out in the new year, we will then also do the same. Because also we have contributed through our disorganization from this end to the fact that you are the only entity that comes now after all others have been here. So we're going to correct that situation. Can we get a mover? Honorable Lucas?
Yes, I was going to ask about the solar panel. But I'm
for the solar panel.
I just want, because I don't know whether you'll look at that photo issue. No. All right.
Okay.
But I moved for it.
Your second head?
Second. Right.
The
Mingani?
Let's thank you very much, MINTEC. Let's thank you very much for setting time aside to come and address us on this outstanding matter, and you are free to stay, you are free to go, it's up to you. Yeah. Hey?
Thank you very much, Chair. We hope that you open and can hear the
baby. We will. We will.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay, if you haven't got the set of the 29th, which we hope that you do, let's move on to
kind of reduction of the name. February moved by Marvel second half.
Can we then move to the 3rd of the 7th of March? 7th of March, are you with us, Honorable Member? Yeah. Can we get a move on? Can we get a first comment on the 3rd of the 7th of March? Page number one, are there any comments on that? Are the people that were present who are not registered? Page number two. Page number two, page number three. Page number four. Page number five. Page number six. All right. Let's get the mover.
I move for adoption the minutes of the 7th of March.
Second, Honorable Lucas. What is today's date? It's the 8th, eh? 8th, 12th. All right. Then the following set would be on the 17th of March. Sorry. 17th, 8th. So, PT, we're going through 7th March. 7th March, and then we only met in April. Is that, or there was a cancellation of a meeting on the 14th of March? But then what about the other period? Then we went to recess. Okay, 17th March, 17th April, I'm sorry, 17th April. I don't know why do I keep on going back to March. 17th April, there's only one page. Hey, corrections there? That's the meeting when I was not present, and Honorable Sondo acted as the chairperson. He can remember if he was there or not. This was a strategic plan and the budget vote. The meeting did not actually take place, it was postponed. Were you present? Let's correct that. The 17th. You were present on the 25th of April. Fine, are you saying you're present in this one? Let's add your name.
No,
Eh? Okay. Okay, we're not there. All right. Very well. In fact, this meeting did not, that's why there's only one page. It did not go on. All right, from those that were present, that means only Honorable Soldo and Honorable Lorimer. Oh, Honorable Lucas, yeah, okay. The president. All right, can I get a mover and a seconder? Between those that were present. By Honorable Lucas, seconded by Honorable Soldo. Okay. The following set is that of the 25th of April. Can we look at the corrections and comments on page number one? Page number two. Page number three. In fact, these minutes are basically the record of the proceedings. If there's any problem, you would find it on recommendations and the conclusions. Page number four. Page number five. See, on the concluding remarks, this appears as if the Minister of Basic Education, the Minister of Education, was addressing us, and he was not. In fact, it's the Minister of Higher Education that had announced the opening of some universities, if there were plans to make one of these speciality for page number five. The way, the manner in which it is written there is as if the Minister of Higher Education and Training addressed us. So we should say there that the committee noted that, the portfolio committee, the PC, noted that the Minister of Higher Education and Training. Yeah. The Minister of Higher Education and Training had announced the opening of some universities. The committee felt, therefore, that it would be good, it would be a good idea if there were plans to make one of these specialty for mining expertise. All right. Re-illegal mining. Okay. An incident was cited regarding the committee's visit to the community in Limpopo. Where police were confrontational on page number six. The police were confrontational to the people, or to the people wielding guns. Second paragraph. An incident was cited regarding the committee's visit to a community in Limpopo. Where does this come from? whether the representation is reflected correctly in the view. Yes. Any comments on page one? Two names. Yeah, the 2nd of May, yeah.
Monsieur, sorry, I don't want to be obstructive, but I have an appointment at Opus 12, and at this rate we're going to finish at Opus 1. So I'm not sure whether if you require my presence to be to form a quorum. I think we just need to speed up, otherwise I have to excuse myself.
We're about to finish. We're about to finish. Just that we... It's necessary that we go page by page so that we don't lock out any comments.
No, it's just the speed at which we go, Mr. Chair. Okay. The speed that's worrying me.
Oh, yes. Page one. Comments on page two. Page three. Page 4, page 5,
if you should investigate the legal basis on which to suspend the power or take away all rights.
Okay? All right. Can we get them over here? And the second... for the 2nd of May, Honorable Santo. Seconded by Honorable Schmidt. Right, H. Then we move to the set of minutes of the 8th of May, which is a one page. The 8th. I've got the 8th of May. Yeah. The 8th of May, where the committee considered and amended the report to an effect. This means the same, nothing. The report could not be finalized until the since there was no quorum. The matter therefore stood over until the next meeting. So the 9th of May.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Eh? On which one? On the one of the 8th. Yes. But the minister just said that the committee considered and amended the report to an extent. It doesn't say which amendments were there. But if
I... Chair, let us say the committee considered and corrected the report because we didn't put a quorum that day and we could not approve.
It does say so that it was no quorum. Okay? All right, so you...
You can't say amended, you must say corrected.
That's what I want to say. It considered the report,
but amendment is, yeah.
Considered and corrected.
Corrected, yes.
Okay.
The committee considered and corrected the report with members who were present.
Now we can first say first of all because present members are there. Yeah, okay. So you move adoption on the bigger and seconded by Santo. All right. 8, 8, 12. Then let's move on to the 3rd of the 9th of May. Page 1, are there any corrections? Page 2. Page 2, page 2, page 2, page 3. Page 4. First, the committee called for some action instead of planning all the time. Action on what? All right, what do you suggest there? Do we delete the first sentence? Figures per hour's worth be more preferable than only figures, okay? All right, let's go back to then page number 4. Oh, we're already on page number 5. No observation, no conclusions, no recommendations. But why? Okay. Eh? Yeah. It was adopted. Yeah. Let's check inside there that the briefing by Council for Geosciences, strategic plan, or on the strategic plan was adopted. You can put that, you can put that just before. Oh yeah, it's also here, at the bottom of the page. It's reflecting. The strategic plan of the Council for Geosciences was adopted by the committee. All right. It's okay. The number is one. Oh, yeah. Let's correct that. I think these minutes were written under distress. Can we get a mover for the 16th of May? Honorable Mchogo. Seconder, Honorable Sonto. let's move on to the 23rd of May. After the 16th, there was a meeting on the 23rd. Have you got that? Okay. No, before the 23rd of May, and then the last Saturday of the 30th. What have you got here now?
The ones we just got now, the 29th of April.
Yeah, we're coming back to that.
We are done.
23rd May, you haven't got?
No.
Oh, no. 30th of May? I was running near the end of the 23rd, but we don't want to leave anything here. Then let's look at the 30th of May. First page, any comments? Second page, any comments? Third page, any comments? Fourth page, any comments? Page 5. All right. Can we get a mover? Honorable Lucas. Seconded. Honorable Mchogo. Okay. Let's go back then to the 29th of February. 29th of February. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page number 5. Last page, number 6. Can you get a move for that? For the 29th of February, Honorable Mchogo, seconder, Honorable Bigani. I trust Honorable members that we won't have this problem again of having minutes dated back this much, where you can't even remember what was said and what was not said. We all understand what was the problem. Kumaspalegov Lucas, we are going to deal with that one last, but I don't know, how far is it? You You have to.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. There are members, whilst we're waiting for that last set, very last set, which unfortunately you did not have in your package. Next week we do not have a meeting. We were asked to cancel all meetings because the president will be receiving the report from the National Planning Commission in that morning at 10, and in the afternoon it will be the normal sitting of the House. So we are asked to cancel all meetings that were scheduled. And you saw at the beginning of this meeting we have indicated changes to the program. So next week straight into the House, and that will be it. Next Wednesday. I will not be present if things did not change. We just received this morning a letter from the Speaker. There's a Sunday forum of parliamentarians that will be sitting and discussing issues pertaining to the resources of countries within the Southern African region. I've been asked then to represent Parliament in that forum by the Speaker. It's on the 13th and the 15th of August. So even if the committee was going to sit, I would not be present if there's a cancellation. But the program is worked out in such a manner that we would not provide for a meeting next week as per the instruction. We'll meet that other week, which would be the week of the 22nd. We will be then dealing with the, we'll be jointly with public enterprises to look at a briefing by public enterprises department. They requested time from us, if you remember, for them to deal with the, familiarize themselves with issues pertaining to the NDFT, NAMDA, and ADF. So we'll be listening from them and take a final decision on what needs to happen in those institutions. And then the program will follow. So you will get a copy of your program in your pigeonholes, of the amended program in your pigeonholes, so that you are up to date in terms of what has changed and what has not changed from the program. We will be communicating as well with the Schmidrift. The intention is to visit them on the 24 and 25. Again, the selected team of members will go there to that oversight in Schmidrift. Hopefully, things are back to normal in that area. And indeed, we would be then heading over the long outstanding money they were given by the company, which owed them royalties. It must have grown now from 3 something million, it must be now in excess of 4 million. But we will then be hearing from that company on what exactly is the amount that they will be handing over to the communities. But you will be briefed on that. We were just winding time. On the study tour to Australia, honorable members, the dates, as I've indicated, are 17 to 21, that whole week. We will be there, visiting different areas and interacting with government institutions, especially on mine health and safety issues. In that country, they seem to have best practice. We will visit some of their operations and to learn from their operations in terms of whether those legislative provisions are actually working or not. Let's go back then to the last set of our minutes, the 23rd of May. Very quickly, any comments on page one? page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Again, shall we get a mover and a second? We must also rush to the meeting of chairpersons and start at 1. Any mover? Moved by Honorable Mchobo. Any seconder? Seconded by Honorable Soft. Very well. Let me thank you very much, Honorable Members and ladies and gentlemen, for this meeting. I was not sure if it was going to be successful because of the problem of quorum, but fortunately we've made it because we did make it quorum. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.